God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. If you want to raise your hand or wave at the screen or otherwise make yourself known, we would just like to say hello. Right on. The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous says that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So we're going to be discussing step four, the inventory, tonight and as well as next week. But tonight we're going to be focused on the paragraphs associated with resentment. And you can come back next week for the fear and sex piece of the inventory. So please help me welcome our panel tonight. We have Patrick and Jason. So I'm going to share my screen and read the first paragraph. Step one says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. We're going to start tonight on page 64. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Jason?
My name is Jason, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 17, 2012. I have a home group, which is Simple Actions. I have a sponsor, and I'm also fortunate enough to be sponsoring someone right now. So step four, the big old step four. For step four, it's fact-finding and fact-facing process. And I'm forced with this word vigorous action, which the definition of that is strong, healthy, and full energy. So when I get to this step four, I'm already have my tasking of how to do this step. And it tells me I'm going to do some house cleaning. But, you know, me being alcoholic, I'm thinking what was dirty in my house. So that's important for me to know that and to work this with a sponsor. And it also tells me that this decision was a vital and crucial step, and that's going to be strenuous, and that the liquor was only a symptom and I had to get down to the causes and conditions. This makes me think, oh, wow, this is why step four is so hard and difficult and everyone fears step four. Because in my mind already, they're tasking me with so much to do that I don't know if I'm ready to do this. And thankfully, I got to go with step four. You know, before getting to step four, you know, I did steps one, two, and three, hopefully. And then that step three, I did that prayer where I offered myself to God. And, you know, in order to do that, that leads me right into this step four. And I can't delay on this step four because it says that it has to be a vigorous action. So for me, it was to attempt this super quick to make sure that I'm ready to continue on. And to come to find out that the liquor was only a symptom, you know, that was hard for me because I was one of the ones that, you know, if we put the plug in the jug, I won't have the issue anymore. It was the drinking that quieted those voices down in my head to, you know, make me feel appreciated, made me feel, you know, the best of the best. And it already tells me it's going to be strenuous, and I'm already feeling the strenuous. And at this point, even before writing anything down, I'm already feeling how I can, I'm already seeing how I can manipulate the situation. Like, oh, maybe I just won't list everything. You know, maybe they don't need to know about this, this, and this, and this, and this. I'm going to keep this to myself, and I'm not going to do anything else. But, you know, all in the long run, that would just hurt me. Because it just says this house cleaning, this has to be a total house cleaning to see what's good that I can offer and what's bad that I need to, I need to find out what's bad and what's keeping me from that. So that's all I got for now.
Hello, everybody. I'm powerless over alcohol. My name's Patrick. Some of you know me for a while. Some of you don't. I've been, sober since December of 1986. That's not necessarily my fault. That's particularly because I've managed to try and follow these simple suggestions. I was reflecting on this this fourth step, and I have to be honest. The reason why I did it was because I didn't want to get drunk. Now, with that said, and saying that I had to be honest, that's the whole point. I could never take a look at me or get honest with myself enough to be able to clearly and rigorously look at me and what was going on. I was full of rationalization, and the alcoholic and drug insanity was allowing me to live in the way that I thought was appropriate. Of course, hitting bottom changed all that. And it's very difficult for me to talk about one step without talking about how the previous step led into it. The third step says we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. That let me off the hook for the fourth step. That gave me a lot of strength from outside of me and gave me a little bit of hope that I was going to be okay by doing this. And with that said, writing that inventory and going through that, it was difficult. It was extremely difficult. Just like anything else that I didn't know how to do and I had never done before, it was going to be difficult. I couldn't go into this thinking that I had a lock on this thing. But the insanity was I did. I thought I was going to go into this thing and write the next great American novel, and you all were going to be thoroughly impressed with my story. And it was full of victimizations and what had happened to me in my life. And this is why I was such a tragic figure. It was all, excuse me, bullshit. It was not a strenuous, fearless, and searching moral inventory of who and what I was. I had never tried that before, and it was very difficult. At the beginning of the process, it was also important for me to understand what the word moral meant. And for me, it was explained to me that moral means truth, and that I had to get out of the business of good and bad and judging me or anybody else. I just had to write the list. And the list was pretty simple, because once I got past my own crap, the things that were appropriate to put on my list were there. They were always there. One of the reasons why I drank was to block them out. Everything was there. I just had to learn how to get out of the way and use whatever trust I had in a higher power to get through it. So the beginning was the hardest part. And eventually, when I got past the hump and I procrastinated a little bit, and I realized, more importantly, like I said, that if I didn't get on with this, I was going to get drunk, the process began. But without going any further, we've got some more paragraphs to read. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. We're going to continue on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed the people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, we found it was that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations which had been interfered with? Jason?
So on this, it's already telling me resentment is the number one offender. Resentment can drive me insane, and I know that. I am capable and was capable of drawing a resentment from just about anything. My alcoholic mind is always telling me, you know, I'll never be good enough, pretty enough, rich enough, and all that stuff. I'm a fan of the line that says when the spiritual malady is overcome, we strain out mentally and physically. And I was excited to hear that because, you know, I was ready to do anything to get sober. I was a product of a self-referral and did a 28-stay in rehab. And, you know, I was afraid to leave there. I would read the steps on the wall, and the course being super quick, I would look at them all and be like, oh, I could do all 12 of them. They don't seem that hard. But when you get into this nitty gritty of step four, and actually it's one of the action steps where you've got to start listing, you know, get the pen to paper. I remember first thinking about when I had to write my resentments, I was pretty sure I was going to destroy a whole forest because I just felt resentful at everything and everyone, you know, my family, my job, anything I could imagine that was in my life, I just felt resentment towards. You know, I did as the book and my sponsor said, and I listed my resentments down on paper in the four columns, which was the, you know, column one, the people, places, things, institutions, the cause, what happened to the cause, what I did to affect this, which was tough to see because a lot of this, as the book just described, was like selfish and, you know, and then the fourth, where was I to blame? It was a real eye opener for me. Where was I at fault? What might I have done instead? You know, that isn't, it opened my eyes a lot because for the longest time, I never thought it was fault for anything. So for me, I just looked at it like, okay, well, this is a chance to really, I wanted to get sober and I wanted to stay sober. So this is the least I could do to try to get all this stuff out of my head that was bottled up, or these people and places and things that I had resentments towards. And, you know, whether they were made up or whether they were actually good enough resentments where people actually did me wrong. So for me to get to that, you know, this step again is very important to do with someone else. Like I said, back in rehab, I figured, you know, self-sponsorship was a good thing. And doing that, you know, I could have manipulated myself and thinking, oh, step four is easy. I'll just write down what I want to write down and I'll be okay. But, you know, it's getting to that fourth column and understanding where was I at fault? What did I do? Is a big feat for me. And I'm glad I got there. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. Patrick?
Yeah. I was a walking resentment when I came in here. I had pathological resentment disorder, and I didn't know it. And so when I began writing the list, it was pretty obvious that what I was projecting out to the world everywhere was just anger all the time. And it wasn't serving me well. I realized that alcohol and drugs were no longer in the picture, so it just wouldn't work. I would have to go back, or I'd have to really face that head on, like it said in the previous paragraph. I was angry and resentful about everything. You know, I had been taken advantage of. I felt abused. I felt less than. I was the victim. All of that stuff. And, you know, that works if you're out there drinking and drugging. At least it did for me. That's a real good shtick. It's a really good shtick. But when drinking and drugging doesn't work anymore, that doesn't work anymore. And I've come to understand what 33 years later, that I still need to work on that. And that's one of the reasons why this step and doing this list is so important. It gives me a baseline, and it gives me an awareness of what Jason said, the understanding that these problems are coming from me. That regardless of what happened, I had to be responsibility for my own recovery from them, and I had to learn how to participate in my own recovery and stop running around being angry and resentful at everybody, thinking that something else was going to fix me or something was going to be responsible for solving my problem. It was hard. It was a tough pill to swallow. It was a big chunk of ugliness that I had to really try and digest. Anyway, that's all I have.
All right, we're going to continue on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. Jason.
So we went through, and to be honest with this step, you know, this tells me I have the chance to benefit from this. I always felt that others were wrong and not me. That's just the selfish nature of who I am. You know, one of the most things I was angry and resentful for was the fact that I grew up in a very alcoholic home and saw alcohol, what I thought was alcoholism, firsthand. You know, one of my earliest memories of my parents was watching my dad drive over my mom's leg as she jumped out of the truck. And I'm like, oh, wow, okay, well, that's what alcoholism looks like to me. You know, I'm even in my worst drink, and I always compared myself out to that. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not that bad. And those were the things that, you know, I try to get alcohol to be alcoholic, non-alcoholic in my own terms, just to kind of make it about someone else. So when I found out, like, when I listed my parents on my resentment list, like, yeah, they were totally bad parents. And, you know, they probably shouldn't have had any kids. But then I was asked that question, like, were you a good son? Ooh, that came out of left field. I wasn't expecting that kind of a question. And, you know, I honestly thought about it. And I was like, you know, was I the best son? Probably not. I mean, I did a lot of horrible things growing up, and I was a bad kid. Being the youngest of three brothers, I tended to fight for attention, and I did that by usually breaking windows or just being a drama queen. So, you know, the moments of triumph where I fell along was those acts of immaturity I did, where I would always say, I'm right, you're wrong, my way or no way. But, you know, that got me nowhere. And it's the same with my ex-wife makes my resentment list a lot. And it's, you know, always comes down to my feelings and how things make me feel. And I'm selfish and I never want to care about anyone else's feelings. Because to me, this just shows that, you know, I have the issue. Other people may have issues, but, you know, I try to make my issues sprung on them to make me sound worse off than them. It reminds me of those days where you sit at the bar stool and you tell people what you're going to do with your life. And then you're like, I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes and then you push it off another day. So, you know, dealing with that, you know, I saw those resentments on paper. And I list them down, and, you know, everyone that I was angry at was, you know, affected my self-esteem, everything about me. So, again, I'm seeing that, you know, I'm I'm selfish and self-centered, and the reason that I'm resentful of these people is because of the way they made me feel. And not once did, towards the end of that, you know, you get to the fourth column of where what was my fault in this, and then you see, okay, well, I did play a part in this. And like right here, it says our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions and personal relationships were hurt or threatened. You know, I always felt threatened. There's things with my ex-wife, I always feared she would take my daughter from me, but you know, it's not a valid fear because I'm making it up in my head. She's not doing any part of that. I just come up with all that stuff in my head, and then I get resentful and standoffish towards her, and that helps no one because, one, I'm not be able to be helpful to my daughter or anything in that fact because I'm so angry and resentful, and then I'm talking about my ex in front of my daughter, which doesn't help things out either. So it just spills over. So it just shows me that I'm spiritually sick, and you know, and like I said in the third step, you know, I should be going to my higher power and, you know, not blocking myself from the spiritualness of this. But there's still times where I choose to do that. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Jason. Patrick?
So one of the reasons why I bought into this program is because the literature pegs me to a T. Everything in this paragraph is so spot on as far as exposing me for who I was and who I can still be if I'm not vigilant. I would have all these many triumphs, and I really thought that at some point I was winning the game until I hit bottom. Yeah, I mean, and some of the insane incidents, yeah, we all have them, but I mean, just stupid stuff. I can remember I got arrested once for trying to let the eagle go at the National Zoo because it was our, you know, our symbol of freedom and liberty, and what the hell was it doing in a cage? And I really thought I was right. And that's where all this fighting led me. Yeah, it was amazing. And I can remember I got a lot of DUIs at a young age in a lot of different states. And I was figuring out ways to beat them. And one of my best friend's dads told me this trick. And he said, you always have a bottle of whiskey with you. Enough in that bottle to chug it down so that you're legally drunk. And I said, why? And he said, because if you get pulled, you pull off the side of the road, you roll down your window to a crack, you turn the car off, you throw your keys out of the cop, and you down that whiskey. He can't get you for a DUI. And so sure enough, I think a week later, I did that. And the cop got so pissed off. He smashed the window, dragged me out of the car. They called a couple others. They beat the hell out of me in the back of the car. They charged me with, I think, 5 or 6 different things. But you know what? I beat that DUI. That was my mini triumph. And I mean, it was pure insanity. And I was always fighting someone or something. And the world was wrong. It's as far as I went. I had been wrong. That's as far as I went. And getting honest and thorough, a theme began to develop when I was writing this thing. And slowly the little crack in my ego that occurred when I hit bottom started to expand, and that, I guess you can call it, gray started entering. And I began to see some things. I still wasn't willing to embrace them, but I was given solace on the fact that this was just the fourth step. But it's amazing because I've done a lot of stupid, heinous, crazy things in the short time that I was alive before I came to this program. And the one thing that was so difficult for me to get honest about was when I was, I don't know, maybe 7 years old, 6 years old, we went on a field trip. And my mom, being the great person she was, just wanted to be a bitch and didn't give me any, you know, spending money to get a souvenir. So all the little classmates were going out and getting a souvenir, and I didn't have any money. So I shoplifted a little souvenir. And I had never thought about that until I got to the fourth step. And that was the hardest thing I could get down to amidst all the other ridiculous, crazy, surreal things I'd done. That was difficult. And that reminded me of just how honest and thorough we need to get. Everything had to go on there to the best of my ability at the time. But this idea of being angry and fighting all the time, that was me. And, you know, somebody expressed it one way. They said, Patrick would sacrifice a few teeth to lose the war. And that's pretty much, that was my life in a nutshell. And of course, you know, getting drunk and doing drugs made it all okay until it didn't, you know, and there I was, realizing that I was in desperate need of learning how to do this step of introspection and really see what was blocking me from living a life different. And the other thing was I never saw anything different, and I began to see something different when I started the fourth step, that there was another opportunity. Anyway, that's it. Thanks.
Awesome. We're going to continue on page 66. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Jason?
So for this one, for me, it just shows me, you know, to drink is to die. That's pretty sobering. But it's easy for me. I remember just living with all those resentments. And I would just thrive off that. I mean, I could get happy resentments, sad resentments, mad resentments, you name it. And, you know, the resentment for me was a big how I wanted to live my life, because it kind of gave me an excuse to drink. You know, like in whether happy, sad, the resentment for me is where I spent most of my time. You know, a pity me. If you had my life, you would drink too. If you had my parents, you would drink. If you had the ex-wife I had, you would drink. And I just found myself saying that more and more and more. That's when it came to the thing, you know, at 31 years old, having this repetition of just saying, I'm not going to drink. And then those voices start up like, oh, you're not good enough. Oh, you'll never be good enough. And I'm promising myself I'm not going to drink. And then I get home and I walk right into the basement to grab that bottle of vodka and squeeze it. And I take that first drink. And what does it do? It tells me I'm good enough. It tells me who cares about my ex-wife? Who cares about life? You know, I'm the greatest person ever. And that's where I was tricked out. And that's where I came at the age of 31 to be like, okay, well, yeah, I'm ready to die for this. Which is sad to be 31 and be like, yeah, I could die for this. And for me, you know, at that point I see that I was blocked from the sunlight of the sky because I didn't care anymore. I didn't care. I had a young daughter. I didn't care. I didn't care about my spouse. I didn't care about anyone but myself and getting that drink and quieting those voices down. Because once I had that drink, it was only took one drink to quiet those voices down. And I'm telling you, all those resentments that I built up through the day, I no longer thought about them. And if I did, I would just chuckle and take another shot because they didn't matter anymore. They didn't matter until the next day when I sobered up and I had to come to terms with my life again, that, you know, here's sober me and I got to deal with life on life's terms now. So for me, you know, once I stopped that drinking, you know, that's where it says the insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. That's what it looked like for me in the beginning before I got sober. I just developed into this routine of just drinking every day, because it just seemed right, and I loved the feeling of not having a care in the world. And, you know, I shut myself off a lot, and I didn't care. My daughter would ask to do things, and I'd be like, sure, we'll do that. And then it was just wound up dad having to go take a nap or be passed out, however you want to look at it, or, you know, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to take a shot of espresso. It was just the insanity of it on repeat every single day. And those moments of clarity when I'm Googling AA to give myself the question test to find out if I'm an alcoholic at work, and I'm putting my hands out in front of me and I'm fighting to keep my hands from shaking, I'm still like, oh, I'm not that bad. You know, there's no insanity there. Or working in a legal office with a candle warmer and a fan scenting the candle office because randomly people like to come up and tell you you smell like alcohol. So the best way around that is a candle warmer and a fan to scent the office so no one says you smell like alcohol. And that just showed, I looked at that back then, and that wasn't insanity. That was my typical day. And today I look back at that and I'm like, that was the stuff, you know, that they talk about blocking me from the sunlight of the sky. And I couldn't be helpful to people back then when I did stuff like that because I only cared about me. Cared, 3 o'clock came, I was out the door. I didn't care if you needed anything. And I don't know how I made it unscathed or anything because, you know, the selfishness and self-centeredness, I'm surprised I still have a career today. And I thank God for, you know, finding someone and finally, you know, getting that inclination of maybe I do have a problem, you know, and, you know, getting, and then getting with a sponsor and getting through steps 1, 2, and 3 to prep me to do this 4-step, to write this stuff down so I can see how insane my mind actually is and how much that the alcohol controlled my life. And I don't want to go back there. Yeah, even on days today in sobriety, I can walk down that road of losing the sunlight of the sky and, you know, get resentful at anyone in a minute. And the only thing I say with today of feeling that is I know I'm doing it, and it kind of hurts that little bit more now because I know I'm consciously doing it. And so to me, it feels like, you know what? I'm going to block the sunlight of the sky right now. I don't need it. I'll go back to AA in maybe 20 minutes after I run this guy off the road. So to me, I have to understand that, you know, my resentment can come and go in a flash. So I just have to be careful when it creeps up on me. And, you know, there's ways that I have to manage that, you know, spot check inventory, you know, have I wronged someone today? Do I need a right or wrong? Yeah, probably. If I'm even thinking about that, I probably have to. And, you know, that's why I have a contact list. You know, I can email people. It's my choice if I want to feel that sourness of not doing that and blocking myself out from, you know, being a helpful individual. I'm in a job of customer service. The last thing I need to be doing is being a Karen to everyone who wants, who needs help or that. And I'm just blocking and being, you know, non-helpful. So that's what I got. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. I'm just sitting here trying not to get a little resentment watching Kevin G in that cool pool water. I resigned myself a long time ago to this being a one day at a time process and a learning experience, because they say some are sicker than others, and that is so true for me. It took me a very long time, a number of years without a drink, to start letting the fog lift and the cobwebs get in my head, and really to start grasping the concept of learning how to live by these principles. And a lot of it's been trial and error. Life hasn't necessarily stopped. The world hasn't stopped turning. Things have gone on, and I've had a few turns in the barrel. But it took me a while to really understand how everything I did was geared towards building resentments. And just as it said in there, the hours wasted in sobriety, as a matter of fact, just sitting there, I remember, I had a career in sobriety, which is one of the things that I was blessed with. Eventually, I got to a point where I went back to school. I finished a degree, and I was put into a career track that I was pretty good at. And I coached and taught for a long time, and I coached in college. And I remember the first college gig I got, I took it without much thought. And I was abruptly terminated after the first season, where I got them to their first national tournament in their history. And I didn't stop to think about what I had done. I sat there and paced the floor for hours, night after night, plotting my revenge. The president's house was right down the street from my house. I would sit there and pace the floor and plan on how I was going to firebomb his house or sabotage his car. And the only way that the grace of God allowed me to make it through that time was the experience I had doing this step and understanding that in this case, my problems were of my own making and that I was going to make it through no matter what. And eventually I was going to meetings on a regular basis. I was calling a sponsor. I was sharing. I was telling on myself. And eventually it passed. And when it passed, I realized, you know what, Patrick, you were arrogant. And you went in there demanding the world. And you thought they were going to bow down to you because you set the terms and the conditions. You didn't oblige them. You made them oblige you. And this is the result. And those are the types of lessons that I have had continually brought into my life. Less and less as time goes on, because eventually I stop liking that sort of pain, and I stop having the desire to waste my time with those things. But I also understand, I mean, it's plain as day, to drink is to die. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to go and wreck my car and stop breathing, although it could very well mean that, but it also means that I'm going to feel like I did when I came in here. And when I first came into the program, I was dead. I was a walking zombie. I had no life. And I was given a little bit of hope and a little bit of that sunlight of the spirit when I came around, and I've been given more and more. But it's very difficult to talk about this stuff without talking about being a young person in AA and talking about relationships. Because they are the chief source of my observation of people using to go out and get drunk. It's a setup. And like everything else in my life, relationships were no different. I would go and I would shop. I use this metaphor. What I was doing was I was going to McDonald's and ordering a T-bone steak. And they would tell me, we don't serve T-bone steak here. And I would get pissed off. And that was the story of my life. Yeah, and then eating shit sandwiches. I did it all the time. And it took a while. It took a long time to really understand that that's what I was doing. I was picking low-lying fruit because I was low-lying fruit. And I didn't want to hear that. All the other low-based impulses having to do with my alcoholism, they all overrode my heart. They overrode my desire to let the sunlight of the spirit take in. And I've somehow managed to survive that without a drink. And I believe truly in my heart of hearts, that's because I made a honest attempt at trying to apply these principles in my life, and a diligent, vigilant course of action in trying to apply them, particularly with the fourth step. Yeah, this is not, for me, it has not been, well, I got to work through the steps. And then all of a sudden, I get to step 12 and I go skipping off down the yellow brick road. I still have to learn. I still have to learn how to live sober, and I still have to become slowly who my higher power wants to make me. And that's a difficult thing for a lot of people to comprehend. I know it has been for me, but it's a hell of a lot easier to let go. And eventually what happened with this step in the process of actually doing it, and in the process of the benefits of doing it, is I eventually learned how to let a lot of things go and move on. Yeah, I have gone through so many life events in sobriety, and I used to think that I was kind of special. because of that. Because I was a special breed of alcoholic because I'd been through a lot more. You know, near-death experiences, almost the death of a child, blah, 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 blah. But you know what? The other thing the fourth step has really made me aware of is I'm just another garden variety drunk. And what's going to happen for me is going to happen the same way it's happened for every other drunk that's come through the doors. I'm not special. There's a reason, Patrick, why they tell you do not get in any major involvements for the first year. And my sponsor used to point out to me, he said, you know what, Patrick? Your problem is the rules apply to mere mortals, but not for you. And those tapes run in my head on a regular basis because I can still be an ass. And sometimes I still am an ass. I have difficulty playing with others. Even today, I'm still subject to the same afflictions that I had when I came in here. They're just so less severe. And more importantly, these steps, and this step in particular, since we're talking about it, has given me one of those tools in the toolbox to be able to whip out whenever I'm in an emotional jackpot. And I don't like pacing floors. I don't like obsessing and plotting because I know, for no other reason, if I continue down that road, I'm probably going to get drunk. You know, that has been shown to me time and time again by coming to meetings and watching people and the understanding that I'm no different. It's going to happen to me, so I need to nip that in the bud. I mean, thanks. That's all.
All right. We are going to continue on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We are prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that this world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Jason?
I like on this because it says the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real. And I come to learn in this fourth step that most of it was fancied by me. That it was all just a bunch of, you know, the selfishness and self-centered of myself that created a mountain out of a molehill on most things. But, you know, these resentments must be mastered, but how? You know, that, and treating these people as if they're sick, like me, you know, I have alcoholism. I'm, it's a sickness, an illness. So, you know, it's tough sometimes to treat these people as if they have an illness. For me, you know, I want to see what my spiritual condition is. I can just go to Walmart and lose my mind there in about a 10-minute period. So for me, it's like, you know, even in sobriety, I back away from that because, and now with this pandemic and COVID and face mask and who's right to wear a face mask and who's not to wear a face mask, this is a tough one for me. And I find myself on a daily battle of this, of having to back away and be like, you know, they may be sick. God, thy will be done, not mine. And I have to repeat that over and over. Because I want to take control of the system. I want to be always right, you know. Who are you not to wear a mask? You know, I don't want your COVID. And that's where I find myself at. And, you know, that's the fanciedness part where I'm already assuming, okay, they're not wearing a mask. They just want to spread the disease. And that's all made up in my head. And that's where I go with those. And I build that quick resentment of, oh, wow, okay, well, here we are. And, you know, when I take a step back and I look at them as they may be sick individuals, you know, I kind of change my thinking. Okay, well, you know, maybe they don't have any masks. Did I offer to give them a mask? Because I'm driving around my car and I have about 50 in there that I'm collecting. But, you know, maybe they can't afford one. Maybe they haven't found someone to give them one. But in the moment, I don't want to look at that. I want to be the right. Oh, well, I'm wearing a mask, so I'm the better individual. And, you know, it says we avoid retaliation or argument. And that's the same one, you know. I step back and don't say anything. It's like getting that email ready and not hitting send, which I used to love doing, is just sending that frustrated text message and, you know, spilling it all out. And, you know, I get to the point now where I can draft an email and not have to send it and put it in a draft email and come back and read it later and be like, that's highly inappropriate. Or, you know, even maybe call my sponsor and ask them, does this sound right? Should I be feeling this way? You know, should I send this? Should I tell this person this? And chances are, if I'm already having that dilemma in my head, it's probably no. But for me, I love that. I love that daily battle I can have in my head, whether it's right or wrong, because I still sometimes want to put it through my thought processing, which I feel is right. But, you know, my thought processing usually never got me anywhere good. So I have to take a step back and, you know, understand that, you know, there's other sick individuals out there, and I have to treat them. You know, they're God's children, and I have to treat them as brothers and sisters. You know, although I may not like their symptoms, and they definitely disturb me, you know, it's for me to take a step back and, you know, re-engage the situation or avoid it all in general. You know, if people are too close, then maybe I should move. Maybe I'm encroaching on their territory. Those are the things I got to look at, you know. Maybe I'm offending them in some way, but for the most part, being selfish and self-centered, I just want to see them as offending me and me not offending them in any way. You know, and here it tells us we cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and everyone. I feel that. And, you know, my sponsor can also help me do that. And, you know, staying in the program, a spiritual toolbox in this program, and, you know, it's up to me to decide whether or not I want to use those tools or, you know, take my life back and, you know, get that insanity back of being alcoholic and running the show and doing all that. Thanks.
Thanks, Jason. This is still today not my first inclination when I get into a pissing contest with somebody. And more importantly, I still get into pissing contests. Not near as many as I used to, but I still do it. Yeah, and sometimes they're really, really stupid. And that just reminds me that, one, I'm still a human being, and two, I'm still a recovering alcoholic. I'm still sick. Yeah, and I just thought of this. About a year and a half ago, I got diagnosed with cancer, and I had some surgery. It was systemic, and I went in a doctor's office with my wife, and I basically had one arm because I'd had the surgery, and there was a guy in there and he was having a bad day. I mean, I could sit here and tell you he was being a jerk off and an asshole, which he probably was, but he was just having a bad day for whatever reason. Long story short, we started fighting in the hospital, in the doctor's office lobby, and my wife is mortified, you know, everybody's mortified, and I'm sitting here with one arm thinking I'm Barney Tough Guy. And the guy outweighed me by probably 50 pounds, and he had a couple inches on me. And I was having a bad day. And it made me feel so bad when I was done, when I got out of there. I the emotional hangover, everything, it was just disgusting. I did not like myself after that. And as bad as I felt, looking back on it, hindsight's always 20/20, that's a real blessing. I don't like doing that. And the wonderful thing about that is if I ran into that guy today, I don't know who he was. If I ran into him, I would probably apologize. and say, look, you know, I really am sorry if I harmed you in any way and I was having a bad day, without any expectation for what the response would be, because it was just the wrong thing to do. And before I got to this fourth step, that wouldn't have even come into the picture. I would have justified it. I'd have come into meetings and justified it. I'd have said he laid hands on me, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And today, the fact that I can come into a meeting, and I did back then, and call my sponsor and do all that stuff and say I was really an idiot, is a real triumph, even though probably it shouldn't have happened. And hopefully I'll learn from that and move on and not let it happen again. But in spite of that, there are little gifts all the time that pop up in my life. And I want to read one to you, because I told you I coached for a long time. And every once in a while I get these nuggets from some of the young men that I coached. And I got this the other night. I was up a little late, and I guess he was too. And this is from a kid that I coached in 98. He says, with the state of everything in the world, I wanted to tell you that you were a huge impact in my life. You forced me to be the leader I am supposed to be in life. You challenged me to be better, and for that, I want to thank you. I'm not sure you get to hear that as the coach mentor you are, but you deserve it, and thank you. How can you put a price on that? I can't. That's priceless. And it just came out of the blue. He just happened to be up when I was, and he was thinking about it. And you know, the fact that I can be a vehicle or a tool for the higher power to be able to have that kind of an effect on somebody is just, it's astounding. It's truly remarkable, and it brings a tear to my eye. Again, I cannot emphasize enough that if I had not gone on with this fourth step and embraced, and every day embraced this design for living, things like that wouldn't have happened. I'd have been drunk, or at the very best, and I seriously doubt it, I would have been a miserable, old, dry drunk suffering from untreated alcoholism. And we know what that looks like. You know, I'm not casting any dispersions or judgment on people, but let's face it, there's a lot of people in the program that are suffering from that. And I hope I'm not one of them. I get up every morning and I thank God for keeping me sober and to direct me in my thoughts in life. And sometimes I'm more successful than others. And after that incident in the doctor's office, I pray just about every morning that shit doesn't happen again either. Because it's not something for a 56-year-old guy that's had cancer treatment to be doing on a regular basis. It's not going to work out real well. Anyway, that's it. Thank you.
All right. We're a little bit tight on time, but I think we can do this final paragraph and give you guys a closing minute each. Sound good? Page 67. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. Admitting our wrongs honestly, we were willing to set these matters straight. Jason.
So I have an old resentment list in front of me from someone, and like, what it affected was my self-esteem, my security, personal relationship. And I just find how selfish I am for that, because, you know, I just see on my fourth column how selfish I actually am. And I had a friend the other day try to tell me to talk to her husband about paying child support, because I pay extra child support. And then she's like, you should be paying that much. And I was like, well, if I start thinking about that, then I'm going to draw a resentment that I'm paying too much. And if I have to think of that, then I know it's not the right place for me to go. So, you know, the way I look at something like that is, if I have extra money coming in, I should be giving it all to my ex-wife or my daughter to live, that I shouldn't be going out buying things. So that's the way I look at, you know, my fourth column of howling to see how selfish I can get. Cause I can always, especially when it comes to financial, I can love holding all my money back. But I've read, you know, that the pain doesn't come in writing inventory. The pain comes if we resist the writing. So, you know, I'm glad I got to work with a sponsor and you know, who walked me through this to be able to write this stuff down and, you know, get it out and see how actually crazy I am, these thoughts in my head. So thanks. That's all I got.
Thanks, Jason. Patrick?
Thanks, Jason. I just think about what an amazing and miraculous thing it is that me and everybody else on here, assuming, has one, not had a drink today, and two, has willingly made a decision and chosen to go through with this. And watching the results of most people that do that is just astounding. And even in my own life, I cannot begin to express my gratitude and articulate the amazing process that has occurred in my life, beginning with the first days when I walked through the doors of AA and talking about this fourth step, the understanding of being able to look inward with the ability to ask for help from a power greater than myself to overcome these things and to get on with the business of being relatively whole and productive in life. It's just astounding. It is not what I foresaw. What I foresaw was nothing but misery, morass, gross darkness. And today it's flipped 180 degrees. Now I see light. And when I allow my own darkness in my world, then I understand today what the process is to illuminate it. And that's just, that's amazing. Yeah, this thing works. For anybody that's new here, this thing works. And it works beyond your wildest imagination. It's worked beyond mine. I didn't see myself in the situation I'm in today. I saw myself dead by 27. That's what I saw. And so it's a wonderful thing. And I want to thank you all for asking me to share my experience, strength, and hope on this subject. And, thanks everybody for being here. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Patrick. Thank you guys both for a wonderful meeting. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. I just loosened up the restrictions on the chat. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Your safety is important. Calling the prop, nope, we're not going to do that. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements for the good of AA tonight? All right. Come see us next Sunday at Simple Actions. We've got a speaker, Ask It Basket. This Sunday, we've got Doug R. from Los Angeles, California. Sunday night, 7 p.m., speaker/Ask It Basket. And next week, we'll talk about fear and sex with Morgan, right in my center square there, and somebody else. I don't remember who the other person is. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we're going to hang out after the meeting. So please don't run off. If you're interested in joining our home group, this is a home group, or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. I'd like to thank everyone who participated. And could I have a volunteer to read a vision for you? You guys, first person to unmute can have it.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hi, Amy.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Patrick and Jason, for my co-hosts, everyone who participated in the meeting. Thank you all for being here. Let's form a virtual circle and have a moment of silence to do with as you wish. You can unmute as you see fit. And we'll close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.